Hello and welcome back to Huddle Up with Inside. My name is Grace Ann Watkins.
And I'm Bree Barksdale.
And we are so happy that you're joining us for another episode. For this episode, we are going to be talking about the importance of relationships in school safety, and we will be joined by John and Heather Calvert.
We're so excited to have John and Heather here with us. So John and Heather will actually be two of our keynote speakers for the Safety Summit this year. And we invited them on today to kind of give a little preview of what they were going to be talking about, which is the importance of partnerships and relationships in school safety. So they're the perfect people to be joining us and talking about this. Dr. Heather is an elementary school principal, and her husband John is a former SRO, but is also now the director of safety for the state Department of Education for Kansas. So they have so many insights into this, and not only worked together, but you know, helped implement a lot of relationships between SROs and administration and staff within their whole area, and just helped really grow the programs together, and had so much experience and advice to share with us on, you know, what are the relationships and the pain points and, you know, the pros and the cons and how you communicate with each other and your partnerships with your SRO, with everyone.
Yeah, and this is such an important topic that can't really be dated, because it really does take a whole village when it comes to ensuring student success, school safety, anything of that nature. And that is exactly what we're going to be talking about today. And they really provide us with some great insights. Like Bree said, they have been doing this for a while, so their expertise and their knowledge is definitely one that we want to lean into. And I feel like we really got a lot of it during this webinar. So we are so excited to share this episode with you, and we hope you enjoy it. John and Heather, I will pass it over to you guys. So if y'all don't care, tell us a little bit about your background, your experience, and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Good afternoon. Officially here in Kansas, it is noon. So good afternoon. I'm Heather Calvert. I've been in education since 2007. Elementary the entire time, classroom teacher, instructional coach, and I've been an elementary principal, probably almost 10 years now. And so I have my bachelor's, my master's, and my doctorate. And you know, our one thing that we always talk about is through all of that, just acknowledging that educators get absolutely zero training on any school safety topic, let alone how to communicate about school safety with students, with parents, with staff, or with law enforcement, whether you have SROs or just even your local law enforcement agencies. So it's, I'm sure, something that all of you educators are experiencing as well. We get zero training on that whatsoever. Super excited to be here. My background mainly is in urban districts, where we do see a lot of struggles with behavior, struggles within the community that we do involve law enforcement. So I've had a lot of interactions with law enforcement in the school setting over the years.
And good afternoon. My name is John Calvert. Graduated in 2006 from college and went straight into law enforcement, and been in law enforcement ever since. About 13 years ago now, I took a role as a school resource officer. And was the school resource officer for three different districts at the same time for about 6 years. I now currently am the head safety specialist for our state. And piggybacking off what Heather said and what we talk about all the time is I entered the school system as a six-year law enforcement veteran. I was federally sniper qualified. I was working with our canine unit. I was going to be on the SWAT team, kicking down doors, living the dream on second and third shift, having a great time. And I entered the schools with zero training on how and why schools operate the way they do. And so honestly, when we go out and we do workshops or we do trainings of any kind, we give presentations, we welcome you to our dinner table because this is where this happened in real time as husband and wife, people who couldn't just go to opposite ends, although I did have to sleep on the couch a lot. But I would come home from work and go, you'll never guess what this teacher did. Let me tell you what this administrator did. And Heather would say, well, this is why they do that. I go, oh, well, that actually makes sense. And then flip side, she would call me or come home and go, you'll never understand. I don't understand why this SRO did this. And I go, well, this is why. And so we just feel like it's such an important topic to really talk about how we can just work together, because we are on the same team. We're on the same side. Just the way in our backgrounds, And then the way we go about getting there is different.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, the unique dynamic that you guys do have as husband and wife, but also SRO history, administration history, that's something we definitely want to take advantage of today when talking to you guys and kind of just get your thoughts on some things. So if y'all don't mind, we'll just kind of jump into the content, get some things rolling. One thing that I kind of wanted to start off on when it comes to law enforcement meeting with administration or EMA or kind of just bringing all the forces together, because it truly does take that village. And I know that you guys know that better than anybody. And that's the message and the purpose that you guys are trying to spread and really emphasize. So first question I kind of have for you guys is, you know, what are some challenges schools typically face when building relationships with law enforcement and EMA, or on the flip side, you know, law enforcement with administration, and kind of in your experience, how have those been overcome, or, you know, just step building blocks to getting it where it needs to be?
Yeah. So in our presentation, we've narrowed it down to five main, we call it merging the worlds. And so five main merges that have to happen. And I don't want to spill it all here. It doesn't cost money. None of them are like, go spend money on this. I hate when I go to presentations and they're like, and it's only going to cost you $99, you know? It's all just things that we have learned. But I say, really, for me, the main barrier where they all stem from is the fact that we are not working in the same space every day, all the time. Even if you have an SRO who is housed in your building, which I've never had that. But even when you do, they're off, you know, watching cameras, or they're, you know, they're doing this and that. They're not coming to your staff meetings. They're not walking classrooms, getting to know staff. They're not, most of the time, they're not able in those spaces to build relationships with anyone. They don't have an easy access to build relationships with students. And I can tell you, even this guy as an SRO would have irritated me if I was a classroom teacher, because it takes so much effort as a teacher to get kids calm and quiet and everybody's focused on a lesson. And then you've got somebody walking in your room going, "Hey, everybody," like, you know, you just kick them out. Like, that just irritates and all the things. So finding time to build relationships and to work through those things. The other main barrier that a lot of times is faced is that because we're on the same team, even though I'm the administrator in the building, I am not in charge of the SRO. Even if they were housed in my building, a lot of our middle schools and high schools have that, but they report, those SROs report to someone else. They report to someone at central office. If you have a local department housed in your district, they still report to their chief. Like, they don't report to the same people. So I'm not your supervisor. You're not my supervisor. We are truly trying to coexist in a space. And that is tough, because if we disagree, who has the upper hand? Nobody. And so we have to find ways to work through that. From an administrative side, I talk a lot in our presentation about our responsibility to make sure that our officers, whether they're responding as needed, whether they're housed in our building, no matter what that looks like, that they have those opportunities to build genuine relationships with students in a way that's not irritating other people, genuine relationships with staff, genuine relationships with my support team. We have a behavior team here at the building that typically responds to big behaviors and interacts with our officers, social worker, counselor. How are we fostering those relationships? Because it also can't just live here. I mean, sometimes I have to be out of the building. Sometimes, you know, things happen. So those relationships have to stand. And so how do you do that? Especially when you've got multiple officers. If we make a call for an officer, I have no idea who's going to respond. And so how do we facilitate that to where everyone feels like they have a solid relationship to build from and go forward?
Yeah, and I think one of the things from the law enforcement side is that we have to understand that we communicate differently. I remember sitting in on some meetings and they were talking about 504s and IEPs, and I had no clue, one, what that meant, and two, realistically, why those were important. And then, having the understanding that I communicate differently. As a law enforcement guy, I'm just very to the point. I don't mince words. And so getting into that educational setting and understanding that we have the time now to foster these relationships and to communicate, that sometimes I have to soften my tone a little bit. When we talk to educators, we talk to teachers or administrators, we communicate differently. And so taking the time to say, "Hey, what's a 504 and why is that important? Why do I care?" Right. Or coming in and saying, "Hey, this is what I'm needing. Mm-hmm. How can we get on that page and work together to accomplish our goal?" I think, again, we say it all the time, and it's true. The number one thing we can do to keep our schools safe is to build and maintain positive relationships. Mm-hmm. And so that's the number one goal out of all of this, mm-hmm. is to build those relationships before an incident happens.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the merging of those two worlds is so important because, like you said, John, you know, there's going to be things that you guys don't realize from a school perspective, but it is important for you to know. And I'm sure there are things on the law enforcement side that, Heather, you're not as familiar with either. So making time to have those conversations and, you know, not make anybody feel less than or, you know, like they can't contribute in the way just because they may not know what an IEP is or, you know, a 504 or any of the police code that you use. So, yeah, I think that's a really, really important point to be made. And I guess kind of following up that question with another, Heather, this one is kind of for you. You know, what can school administration do to ensure that SROs are seen as approachable and supportive figures by students and kind of really give them that space to thrive instead of, you know, students just looking and be like, I'm scared of that SRO. I don't want to go up and have anything to do with them because I'm afraid I'll get in trouble. So kind of how do you see that?
Yeah, and that's one that, you know, working in urban high poverty areas has always been at the forefront of my mind because a lot of our kids in these communities sometimes are told things like, you know, police are only exist to remove you from the home. Don't talk to police, you know, and combating that can be really hard because we also don't want to go against what the parents are telling kids. And so it's really just taking advantage of every positive light you have to have an officer come. So we make sure that our officers are invited to every community after school event that we have. We're doing a haunted hallways, which is like trunk or treat, but you don't have to decorate your trunk. So like haunted hallways in the building and inviting our officers not to work the event, but to come and hand out candy to kids and interact not only with our students, but with our parents in a way that is completely not even academic related. It's outside of the school day. So they're not here working. So they're not running your tags. They're not doing anything. They're just here as a community partner. It's so important. We do breakfast and books every Wednesday in our building. And so we like to have a lot of our SROs come in. We also like to have even just like actual our police department officers come, not our SROs. We have our own department come in and just faces that you might see in the community. We always ask who patrols this area in the nighttime? Like who might our kids see in the community? Can you come and read books to our kids? And so giving those every opportunities. Staff is one, again, we're doing an event this afternoon at school, making sure that our officers are invited. And, you know, we don't have one officer that responds. So I extend that offer to the department, like anyone who feels like they're connected to my school, please come and just celebrate with our staff. We'll do a potluck next week as our parent teacher conferences. We'll do a potluck, invite the officers. One thing that I've also learned, and this I learned from him, you know, we don't understand a lot of times as administrators, like I love my little mini fridge back here and the bathrooms around the corner. And so I don't think about things like, oh, I'm not in a car for 8 hours a day driving around. And do the officers that respond feel like they can use the bathroom or grab a bottle of water? Or do you need a snack? You know, like we take that advantage of those things because I have an office. And so I know where all of these things are and I can keep them stockpiled when I need them. And just little things like that, making sure the officers know that we appreciate them and that they are welcome in our space. We invited you here. We called you here for help. Either way, you are welcome to use anything in our building, just like every other staff member is.
So I kind of got to thinking with what we were talking about a minute ago with communication. So I'm from super small town, Alabama, and so small that we're just now getting some of our first SROs in some of the schools. What are some of the things that you would tell people for an SRO going into a school for a first time? What's some of the first parts that you would like for them to start communicating with you and you communicating with the SROs and just those first little pieces that you should really start building with?
Definitely. As soon as you can reach out and just come to the office, meet the ladies in the front office and, you know, talk to the secretaries. They're always the welcoming face. I always like to establish with others, SROs or not, but how is the best way to communicate? Are we going to text each other when we need? Is it okay for you to stop by? Is it okay for you to walk the building? Every administrator is different and every building is different. And people know. So some buildings, like in our building now, SROs can walk around the building. They don't need to check in with me. Staff don't care because we have set that precedence for the past 6 years that I've been here. But I have worked in buildings where my first year, if an officer started walking around the building, I'm going to get 18 phone calls, right? Saying, why is this person here? What's going on? Is everything okay? Are we on lockdown? You know, freaking out for no reason. And so making sure that we understand how we're communicating, what do we want that to look like? John has always preached, set a time to meet on your calendar that is recurring once a month. And if you have to move it, that's okay. But if it's not even on your calendar to begin with, you're not ever going to do it. And things come up, and at least even if you can't meet in person, you have, it's on your calendar. So you remember, oh, I do need to touch base before something has happened, not always in a crisis. And the other thing is, what are we going to do after we have an event happen? Either, I mean, it could be just a negative interaction with a parent. It could be something that we have addressed with a student. What, it could be a huge safety issue, you know, like, hey, the officer walked around and saw a prop door or whatever. How are we debriefing from that to make sure that we're both focused on the conversation, and then who's communicating back to the staff? Like, what is the chain of that communication? Do we want the officers to communicate? Is the administrator communicating? Are we doing it together so that we have time to process through that? So no one ever feels like I'm not invited, I'm not allowed, or also that they don't value what I'm saying.
And I think too, you gotta, the main thing I would tell the SROs is, so often I would show up on scene, right? When I wasn't an SRO, I'd show up on scene, and this is mine, this entire, whether it's a car stop, something at a house, a business, this now belongs to me and I am in charge. When you show up to a school, it's, that's not the case, right? We really do have to work with our administration. And I love this. We are one team linked for success, right? So it's not a, I'm the SRO, I'm the police and I'm in charge. And she's not saying, well, I'm the administrator and I'm in charge. No, no, we truly are working together to combat this problem. And when we stop fighting each other and start fighting the problem, that's when the success happens.
Absolutely. And I think that's such an important, because like you guys were talking about earlier, you know, you don't want to wait for something to happen to then determine, okay, we need relationships with our police officers, EMA or administration, you know? So it really is taking joining forces of everybody, because when you don't know whose responsibility it is in a crisis, you know, oh, I thought that was the police department's job. Well, I thought this was the school's job. So one thing I kind of want to ask about is, you know, whether y'all do it through the monthly meetings, like you guys mentioned, how do you kind of keep the conversation rolling to ensure that everybody understands their role, no matter how big the crisis or emergency is?
Absolutely. And that's the big one is, hey, the first Monday of every month or the second Wednesday at 1 o'clock, it is a standing meeting, and it's 30 minutes, it's an hour, whatever you can give, right? And so that is to come in and say, what are we working on? What is going on? Tell me what you're doing, John. Tell me what you're doing, Heather. How can we support each other? These are the big events that have happened this week or this month. And especially if you haven't had these meetings and this is something you haven't done, I really say you should do it every week. Mm-hmm. And then you can dial it back, right? Okay, maybe we go to every other week. Now maybe just once a month, whatever it is. Because we're still coming in and touching base. When I come into our building, I'm coming in, hey, how's everything going? What is it that I need to know? The other thing is that after any crisis, even a drill, we have to debrief with students. We need to debrief with staff. And so I'm a big proponent of these kids in these classrooms after a drill or a real life event need to be able to debrief with their teacher and say, why did we do this? Mm-hmm. I don't understand this. I have questions about this. And the teacher then has that time to answer the questions, which helps build confidence in the plan, which helps build the relationships with their students. But if there's a question they can't answer, at the end of the day, we're going to have a staff meeting for 15 minutes with the SRO, with administration. What went well? What didn't go well? Talk to us about this and let's go through it. And then you can take those questions and those answers that you got back to your students. If we can't answer it, then maybe we go to the superintendent. And if the superintendent can't answer it and the safety people can't answer it and the administration can't answer it, maybe we change what we're doing to where it makes sense. Right. So just allowing that time. And again, I say it all the time to law enforcement, because in law enforcement, we don't have time to do this. We're on the side of the road. We're at somebody's house. This is not good. We got to get in. We got to get out. As far as being an SRO, we're in a school. We got nothing but time. And so taking the time, again, talk about situations beforehand. I say it all the time. If the worst thing I can do as an SRO is arrest a kid, doesn't mean I didn't do it. But I had that in the back of my mind. We know the negative impacts of arresting a juvenile and putting them into the system. But if you cross this line, if you sell drugs or you have drugs at school, I'm going to arrest you. We knew that. But there were times where we would get into some questionable things about, okay, what's the school going to do? What's the school's response versus what is my response? Because a lot of times I have two or three different things that I can do as law enforcement. But as long as we do it the same way every time, then I'm fine with that.
So I know you say you have all the time, but administrators on there are already shaking their heads like, I don't know who this guy is, but no. And so what I do, I don't have time to meet after every drill. I really don't have time even after a crisis. I do not have an assistant principal. I never have. And so it's just me and, you know, 300 kids and over 50 staff members. I don't have time to collect everyone at the end of the day. So what I did instead is I have a Google form, and after every drill, or we do have a lot of events where we're on hold. We do. I love you guys. We're on hold or we're in lockdown. We do have quite a few events. And so I always, or a kid will pull that. We have fire drills or fire alarms in our bathroom. So those get pulled all the time. So I just have a Google form. And on the first question is, and I'm more than willing, if anybody wants it, I'm more than willing to give it to you for free. It's not fancy, but it's what happened. Was it fire, tornado, or crisis? And then it kind of links them, and it says what went well, what did not go well, what questions do you have? And I just send that form out very easily, to email it to every staff member and say, please reflect. It's optional, and people who have opinions in or questions and things that didn't go well that I need to put attention to, instead of in an open forum where sometimes the mob mentality takes over, I am able to quickly get a list of what went well, we need to keep doing because it went well, what did not go well, that if it might have been a one-off, I have to decide in the moment, and then what questions. And it gives me time on the back end to go get answers and then come back to staff and say, hey, these were great questions. This is how we're going to adjust. Or go to a specific staff member and say, hey, I saw your concern, but that really, I think, is a one-off because, you know, it was raining and so nobody happened to be in that space, or, you know, whatever. I don't think that'll happen again, but it's definitely on my radar. Thanks for pointing it out. I'll also say it's good to communicate. So I'm incident command. When he was talking about who's in charge, I'm incident command trained. I don't understand any of it. And so the first thing I always say is, if there's a real event, as soon as someone shows up, I need you to know I'm not even going to use the right words, but I am relinquishing command of the situation. I want to not be involved. I don't understand any of the things. So tell me what you need and I'll make it happen. But some administrators, I worked for a different administrator when I was an assistant principal, and she loved incident command nonsense, right? So she was like, she had her badge thing, like she was ready. So just having those conversations, you know, about who's going to be in charge if we have a real event.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, we had somebody pop in our Q&A section saying that they would love for you to share that Google form. So I will make sure to get that from you. Yes. And God, we will send out a follow-up email tomorrow with all sorts of resources and things like that. So I will make sure to get that from Heather and include that for you guys, but kind of keeping on track. So I know we've really talked about the importance of relationships between administration and SRO and kind of higher up powers in the school safety world. But, you know, as you guys were talking about how important it is to bring in teachers in this space, you know, students, parents, it takes everybody. So, I kind of just wondered how, in your experience, because I have a feeling that both of you have been pretty good at this, creating that environment where staff, students, parents feel empowered to engage in these difficult, you know, conversations surrounding safety and speaking up if they do say something, and, you know, knowing that their concerns won't just be taken and kind of pushed to the side, but that, you know, the school or the district is wanting to hear them out, wanting to work with them on things. So I guess that's just kind of my question is, you know, how can you create that supportive environment where everybody feels empowered?
Yeah. I mean, we both preach the same thing here. Like, it's just honest. It's honest conversations. I do a training every year for my staff at the beginning of the year. And I do have a different lens because of John being my husband. But we just have to call it like it is. Can I promise you that nothing will happen in this building? No. Like, I will never make that promise. And so it is up to all of us to do all of the things that we can to best be prepared. And we have to work through that. And I think the hard part is that, and John will admit this, but a lot of times when officers come in and do that training for you, they make comments that are very harsh and crass sometimes. We had one in our district training administrators this year, and he stood up and he said, I just need you guys' help because the doe-eyed first-year teachers need to understand that they might have to kill someone. And I thought, oh, I hope no administrators take that and go say it to their staff, because that's not the way to get the message across. And there's different ways to say it. And so as an administrator, I would highly encourage you to partner with your officers, to have conversations, partner with district office staff on what is our protocol. But, you know, as administrators, we hire our staff. I love having SROs in the room when we're doing the training so that it appears as a partnership. But as the bottom line at the beginning of the year, a lot of the staff, if we've had turnover, don't know the SRO, and that relationship is not there to trust. And but they trust me because if nothing else, I hired them and I've been doing their new teacher stuff. And so it's just honest conversations and owning that we can't say we're going to be, I can't promise you that nothing will happen here. I can promise you though, that we as a staff are going to do everything we can to be prepared and to always be alert, and that we are going to get through it together as a community. And parents appreciate the same thing. We're very honest with our parents. If we have to go on lockdown, I am communicating with parents right then. I actually use a GroupMe app with my staff because it's free as well. And if we go on lockdown or something's happening, I'm immediately putting in that GroupMe, this is real or this is a drill, so that they know what's going on. Hey, it's a medical emergency. It just calms the body and it gets everybody used to being in a hold, but that it might not be the end of the world, that something's happening. It's just a medical emergency and we have to go on hold to clear the halls right now. Or we've got an irate parent at the front door. They're not in our building, but we just need to maintain some control in this moment. And people appreciate this year. Unfortunately, we did have a drive-by shooting on our property. It was right after dismissal, about 10 minutes after dismissal. Thank the Lord, no one got injured. But it was kind of a wake-up call for people as well. However, when the police investigated, it had nothing to do with our community. And so being able to put actual facts out to the community of, hey, this wasn't even our community. It started across state lines. It just ended here. I got not one freaked out teacher, not one freaked out student, not one parent saying, oh my gosh, you guys, you know, we're not prepared, we're not safe, because they knew we communicated, we were prepared, and everything, you know, we handled it. And they got factual information very quickly about the incident.
I think when we talk from the SRO standpoint, again, it comes back to those relationships, because we sit back and my challenge to everybody has always been, and it's the rule that pushed me out of my comfort zone more than anything else. But if it's not illegal, no one's going to get hurt, and it doesn't break policy, my answer is yes. Now, that means that I have 2 rap videos out there. It means that I've tap danced with the elementary school music program. They wrote in a script for me at the high school play. All the thing, I was grill master one day at the football game because the grill master wasn't there. So I got to flip burgers one day. Everything that I could do to make sure that they saw me as a person before they saw me as a cop with a badge and a gun, right? Because when we do get into that mode, I want parents, community members, staff members, administrators, teachers, whoever, I want them to trust me because John loves us. John cares about us. He cares about our kids, and he's going to do what's best. Right? I'm not going to set up a perimeter. I'm going in, right? Because those are my babies, just like they're your babies. I'm going to treat these kids like they are my kids because they are my kids. I get made fun of because I still call them kiddos. I had a kiddo of mine who was a former student. I saw him. He's like 28, 29 years old. And I was like, hey, what's up, kiddo? And he's like, Officer John, I'm 28 years old. I'm like, whatever, you're 16 in my eyes. How are you? Right? But by doing all of this prior to an incident, now all of a sudden, Officer John's got her back, right? He's working with the administration. Again, we have the time. I tell SROs all the time, if I'm going to interview a suspect and they're 14, 15, I'm calling the parents first. And I'm going to have the parents come up to the school, and I'm going to make sure the parents are involved. Or if they don't want to come to the school, we can go to the police department, we can go to the sheriff's office, wherever it is that we need to have this interview. Because if my entire case rests on a 14, 15 year old admitting to the crime, then my case is pretty weak, right? Let me do some other investigation if need be, but I'm going to build this open, honest communication and relationship with you, because I'm not going to hide anything. I want the parent there to talk with their kids and be present, so they hear the same thing that I'm hearing from their child. Because again, that's what I would want as a parent. If my kid was in any kind of trouble, I would want to know. So again, just going that extra step and building those relationships, hopefully prior to an incident. Because once an incident happens, it's too late, to then go, oh, here's my business card. Oh yeah, no, I'm part of the community, right? No, I'm here, I'm there. This is what we're doing.
Yeah. So one thing that also crosses my mind, outside of Inside, I'm also a high school coach. Kind of talk about how y'all navigate extracurricular activities, because, you know, I feel like we always talk about the importance of the things that happen inside school, the lockdowns, things like that, but the after school activities, you know, have just a chance of something happening. And you know, how does administration and SRO kind of navigate through those situations?
So we had, in this country last year, we had more violent events take place at after-school extracurricular activities than we did actually inside of the school during the school day. It's evolving because we're getting better at
securing the schools
during the day. Again, those are about having a plan, talking about it with your administration. I love tabletop exercises. So, you know, bringing your coaches in and going, okay, the big ones are football and basketball, but most of the time those football, basketball have some added security. Mm-hmm. But what about baseball? What about cross country? What is it? I ran cross country only because I needed something to do to keep me busy. Right. I know we're on Zoom and I'm in black slimming clothing, but this don't run. And I definitely don't run now unless it's after a donut. But if, what is it, coach, that you would need if something happened? Mm-hmm. And then having the athletic directors or the coaches, because especially I'm going to an away game, so I'm not even in my building. I'm not even with my administrator. Mm-hmm. I'm here as the coach, but what is that AD doing? What is that principal doing? What are we doing? And so having the plan, having the communication, and then sitting down and just having an hour-long tabletop. Mm-hmm. I presented a tabletop last week to a district, and we went through it. And the administrator said, we're going to get buses. I said, great. How long is it going to take to get buses here? And he said, it'll take 20 to 25 minutes. And the transportation director fell out of his chair and said, no. It's going to take 45 minutes just to recall the drivers to their buses. And it's going to take another 15, 20 minutes to get them out. And he's like, oh, that's not a bad thing. But now we know that it's going to take about an hour and some change. And we got to get something done in this hour. So sitting down, talking through what all we would be needing, I think would help a lot of issues.
I think the other thing is, and I, at an elementary level, obviously we don't do any of the sports stuff after school, but we send our kids off on field trips all the time. And one thing that I always am very pushy with my teachers on, and nothing's ever happened, so they're still pushing back on me, and we have a very transient population, but it would be the same at the high school level, is do you have contact sheets for all the kids that are in your care? And do you know who you can release a child to? Because if something is to happen, even a bus accident, right? Like not even something that is a shooting or anything, but a bus accident, and people are sending in whoever they can to go get the child, who can you release to? Because we are still bound to release to specific people who the parents have said okay to. Who are you going to be able to release to? Do you have contact information? And are you prepared to sign kids out? Because when you're away and something happens, you can't quickly just get information ready to go. And so I always am encouraging staff and telling them, you have to have contact information for your kids and know who is on that contact list. What if they get sick even? We have no idea. We're out in the public, you know, at all these places. Who are you going to release a kid to, and can you contact them? Because now you're not here during the day with all of the supports of the front office staff and the nurse and all these people. Do you know what allergies kids have? Do you know what medications they're on? Because guess what? It's in their enrollment papers, but I bet you have no idea because it doesn't impact you during the day. But do you know what medications they're on? Because if something happens medically, you need to have that information.
Absolutely. And I forgot to mention this at the beginning, guys, but we do have our Q&A box open. We'll leave a specific time at the end to kind of answer any questions that come in. But if they come up while we're discussing anything, feel free to throw those in the chat and we will communicate those to John and Heather. But just to kind of keep things rolling even more, another question I had was, you know, kind of stepping outside and because you're talking about the transportation director, that brings in, you know, that's a different relationship that you might never think about. Well, you know, in the case of an emergency, we got to get kids off campus, buses, you know, things like that. So bringing all these key players to the table and building out these teams that are beyond just administration, SROs, and, you know, EMA. So when you're kind of having these tabletop exercises, when you're really working through emergency, potential emergency situations, you know, who do you typically find to be most important to come to the table? I know you've got your entire Board of Education, you know, all your directors, administrators, stuff like that, but just to make sure everybody is involved.
Yeah, I think you hit it right on the head. Everybody. I think the decision makers, the heads of each department should be involved, especially when we're going to talk through create or edit plans. You got to have everybody. What happens if there's something that goes on? We put a school in lockdown one time because of an external threat. Mm-hmm. the school is fine. Everything's going to be good. It was just a basically nobody's coming in, nobody's going out. But we had over 45 different law enforcement officers respond to that area. And we were there for about 2.5 hours. Well, it just so happened that it was over lunch. So I'm the incident commander because I was the SRO and the sheriff refused to take incident command from me. So I'm the incident commander. Well, I got to feed my guys. Mm-hmm. And so thank goodness I'd been the SRO for some time and I knew a lot of our food facility peoples and was able to go talk to them and say, hey, I got to feed my guys. Do we have extra lunches? And I'll pay for it. Or I'll put on the department card and the food service people were fantastic. John, we got you. Don't worry about it. How many lunches do you need? We'll put them in styrofoam, mm-hmm. all the things, right? But that was one of the things that I never really thought of. If there's an incident that's going on, how are we going to feed our kids?
Well, and at the elementary level, we've had multiple instances where other schools have had issues around us and they have had to bus their kids here due to a safety issue or something that happened, and we have to feed them. So it's really scary to not put it out there as everyone has to be at the table, and only people who either we think should be at the table or who think themselves should be at the table, those voices get missed. And then it's just in the moment. And then we have an emergency where we have all these people who are missing a transportation step or a food service step, or I mean, even translators, right? Like our bilingual department, they need to be a part of this. How are we getting information out quickly?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So truly the heads of each department who can make the decisions have to be there because what we might think might not affect something affects it big time. And so truly when we say everybody, who's in charge of your subs, mm-hmm. you know, how is this going to affect our substitute teachers? I have no idea, but you know what this person does. Mm-hmm. And so really when we say everybody, we mean mm-hmm. everybody.
I think that's such an important point that you made too, Heather, was talking about having another school district have to kind of use you guys to house students in case of an emergency. So I think too, when we talk about these relationships, it needs to go beyond just our school district and our immediate responders as well. You know, you've got to have relationships with those neighboring school districts. I know an incident that happened here recently close to us here in Alabama was I think it was a Friday night going to a football game. The hosting team received a threat and they had to communicate that with the opposing team, and the opposing team decided, hey, we're not going to send our people into that. So they made sure to communicate that clearly and efficiently and, you know, not put anybody in harm's way that, you know, unnecessarily. So I think that's another important thing to think about is, you know, have those relationships with other administrators in districts, other superintendents, other SROs. So in case something does happen where you need even more outside help than just your immediate emergency responders, you have these districts that you can lean on. So I guess I'll kind of ask you guys about your experience with that and the surrounding districts. Do you guys kind of lean into that much? Do you have a lot of relationships there?
I mean, from a school point, we're all on the same team all the time. Like, it's not uncommon for me to call another school outside of district or call central office and just, you know, hey, this is what happened. You know, can you guys help with this? We share kids. I mean, I think that schools are not very jurisdictional. I don't know if that's a word, but like, it's very common at the school level. Our kids, their school, they were busing kids to an after school sporting event at the high school level, and the bus broke down and they were, you know, an hour and a half from school. And I remember at the board meeting, they were talking and just shouting out the other district because our superintendent just called another superintendent and said, hey, our kids are stranded on the side of the road. The buses broke down. Do you have any bus you can send? And they were able to send a bus and get the kids back to the home school. And just, you know, leaning on people like that. I think it's very just kind of what schools do. I've never run into a situation where I haven't been like, well, let me just call, like, or gotten calls from other places saying, hey, you know, this family moved in, or we got this or that or whatever, can you help us? So I think that's more probably of an issue on the law enforcement side potentially, just because every department is so different. And in the schools where, you know, we're a very large district. I think we have over 21,000 students. So we have a lot more people. So sometimes everybody calls people different things at the district office level. And so trying to figure out who to talk to sometimes is probably the problem. You know, we have a director of transportation, but other districts that might be just an operations director, depending on how many people you've got going. So that's probably the biggest struggle is who to talk to, but you can typically navigate that pretty quick on the school end.
And I think from the law enforcement side, we play the games on this is city versus county versus state or whatever the jurisdiction is. But when there's the biggest problem you're going to have in a crisis situation is that everybody's coming. And it doesn't matter. They're coming from every county, every neighboring city, whatever, whoever, and we're all coming and we're coming in hot. And so that's why you see a lot of times, especially in these crisis situations, you'll have hundreds of cop cars. And so the hardest part a lot of times is we don't need you. Go stage, right? We literally have everybody here. Sorry you were late to the party. Go stage. And I think that's a great job that both education and law enforcement does. When people need help and it's a crisis situation, nothing else matters. We truly are on the same side on that point.
Absolutely. And too, I kind of wanted to shift to talk about the student side of things, especially Heather, since you do work in an elementary school, kind of creating those relationships with students. And kind of, I feel sometimes at that age, you know, you have to do lockdown drills. We're starting to have those conversations younger and younger. So kind of how do you approach that with your kids, with your students of, you know, hey, this isn't something that we're doing to try to scare you. Unfortunately, this is something we have to prepare you for. And, things like that. So I kind of just wanted to know how you go about having those conversations, making it a little less of an intimidating topic for the students.
So we, you know, really it's at this point, it's just training my kindergartners because I've been here for 6 years. And so the kids know like, oh yeah, it's fine. The first drill that we do, I always make sure it's the first week of school, not the first day of school, but the first week of school, we do, fire drill and crisis drills. And we go through the crisis progression. So I kind of do them all at that time. We don't do a tornado drill at that time, but we do the other two. And with either of those drills, I get on the intercom. It's planned, first of all, so staff are aware. And they have put that in their morning meetings with kids that, hey, we're going to have a fire drill about 9 o'clock. And we do that because there's nothing more terrifying to a young student who is in the bathroom when the fire alarm is pulled or when the intercom comes across and we're in a hold. Like that is so terrifying because they don't know what to do. That's not a normal situation. Or if they're walking in the hall because they just visited the nurse. And so we don't want our kids to be in that situation the first time they're in a drill for the year. So first we make sure everyone knows when it's happening. And then before either of those are called, I get on the intercom and very clearly and calmly take as much time as needed to walk through, you know, we're going to have a crisis drill. There's different levels of crisis. The first one we're going to practice is a hold. And we go through like, why would we call a hold? We'd call a hold if we just need to clear the hallways. There's not necessarily danger outside of the building or inside of the building. We just need the hallways clear. I give some examples of why. And then I go through what's going to happen when we call the hold. I get off the intercom. And then about 30 seconds later, I call a hold. And then I clear the hold and say, now the next level is if there might be something in the community that's not safe. You know, and just really calmly, it takes the first time we do either of those, it takes about 20 minutes. But again, I've gotten so much positive feedback because staff who aren't comfortable talking to kids about those, they don't have to now. All they have to do is manage in the space and answer if there's any questions, because I use the Google form, they aren't feeling stressed about I have to have an answer. They know that they'll just say, I don't know, we're going to ask Dr. Calvert, we'll see what happens. And we do all of those things. I also have tons of staff in the hall. So before any drill is called, I always ask staff, if you feel like you need an extra support person in your room when we do these for the first time, let me know. You know, and it might be because the staff member is not comfortable, might be a brand new teacher who's like, absolutely not. It's the second day of school. I don't know what you're talking about. It might be because we've got, like our kindergarten classes this year have 30 kids in them. And a couple of the students in there have autism. We have a Down syndrome. And so those students need even more support. And so to be able to provide support for the teachers, because if the teachers are stressed, the students feed off of that stress. If the teachers are emotional, the students become emotional. And so the main thing we can do is make sure our staff are calm and know what's going on. And I take as much of the burden off of them as I humanly can. They're always scheduled. All of our drills are always scheduled on the calendar. So it's never a surprise, but we don't do as much prep work. So if a teacher sends a kid to the bathroom, we work through it as quickly, you know, what are you going to do if you're in the bathroom? Because that's a real situation. What happens if the fire alarm goes off? What are you going to do if you're standing in the hall, right? Like, how do you do that? And it's just practicing over and over. And if we have a drill that doesn't go well, then we immediately reschedule it and do it again. like the next day, so that kids know, staff know, like, this is so important. We're going to make sure we do it right. And we'll do it as many times as we need to make sure that we can do it successfully.
Yeah. And I just echo what Heather said. Again, this is that dinner table, like, how does this work? We also have to understand that as kids, we have two kids, 10 and 13, and they don't know a world without doing lockdown drills, right? That's sad and it's horrible, but that's the realization that we're in. Just like when I was going into school and I was going through, we did a fire drill every month. Mm-hmm. Fire drills weren't traumatic. They weren't scary because we did them all the time. So I love, you know, talking with Heather and working through all this. I love the fact that, one, I'm not a fan of unannounced drills, right? Plan them, announce them, let everybody know. You don't know how you're going to work in a real world scenario until the real world scenario hits. So don't bring in that trauma. Plan your drills, announce your drills accordingly. But then we also have to understand that as adults, a lot of times the trauma that our kids get from these drills come from us, because we are the ones who are uncomfortable with this. So being confident in our plan and confident in knowing what we're going to do will help with that. Because again, like I said, my 13-year-old goes into a lockdown drill. She knows what I do. So she comes home and tells me about it. And she's like, this is what we do. My 10-year-old, same thing. Yeah, Dad, we do this. And it's like, okay, great. How are you feeling? We're fine. Because we've gone X number of years with, mm-hmm. this is just the way it is. And that's sad and it's unfortunate, but we have to internalize that as adults, that sometimes it's us that pass the trauma and the fact that this is uncomfortable. So I love the fact that Heather gets on and she's the one. That way it's one message. And every person in this school, whether you're a staff member, a volunteer, or a student, you're hearing the same message. And it's calm, it's cool, it's collected. And if there's questions, let's talk about it.
Yeah, I can just remember being in school and, you know, starting with the tornado drills and the fire drills. And by the time I finished high school, it was when all the bomb threats were going on. So we finished high school with some of the bomb threats and, you know, the teachers were so relaxed about it. And, you know, I just remember thinking in my head as a high schooler, like, let's see how fast we can load this bus. And it almost became a game to us. And like, we never took it as a scary situation. We learned the process, but in process, it was fun to us. I know if it would have been a real situation, it would have been a little different, but to take the fear out of it was just, we knew what to do and didn't stress over it. But moving into Safety Summit conversations. So, you know, we advertised and to let everybody know, John and Heather are two of our keynote speakers for this year. John was with us last year and now Heather's joining us this year. Besides talking about the relationships and developing that between administration and SRO, if y'all want to talk about the other two classes that y'all are leading for us.
Yeah. And the last question brought that right in. I'm talking about rethinking crisis drills, making sure that we understand that there are a lot of different things out there. A lot of different crises. Here in Kansas, you think of us as a tornado state, but we average 2 earthquakes per day here in the state of Kansas. So we don't do earthquake drills, but understanding we've got to rethink the way that we do things. If we are continually for a fire drill, the principal, the custodian, somebody just goes and pulls it and we're going the same route every time and we don't throw any wrenches in it, what are we doing? And it's about being low trauma, high empowering. And so I'm really excited to kind of bring that in and just give, again, just like Heather said at the beginning of this, I'm not going to have you buy anything. It's not $400 and look at all the things. These are just ideas and stories and things that you can take back, implement immediately, and they're free. And so I look forward to really diving in and empowering our staff when it comes to crisis drills.
And my session is on creating powerful partnerships. So it talks about bringing the community together with parents and the school and how we can really create just a triad of support for everyone. And so it's just kind of a lessons learned. We have a lot of supports that we've added to our community over the year through, some of them are grant funded and now they are totally sustainable through just the donations that we get from our community partners. But rethinking how we use our community partners. A lot of, you know, in the first 3 years I was here, we didn't do a good job at bringing it all together. And so we were constantly asking our community partners to do all the things. And every time we needed something, it went out to all the partners. So all our partners heard was like, oh my word, here it is again. Like, and so we completely rethought how to be very strategic with our community partners, but also how to make sure that what we were, the supports that we're offering and the partnerships that we're creating are what our parents are needing and also what our community partners are needing. And still with, you know, as a school, we do a lot of support with, you know, the social emotional side with our families. We provide, you know, basic supports for the home, but also how can we leverage that then to show the parents that we're on the same team together to bring the best supports possible when it talks about, you know, how are we promoting safety within our community and what can the school do to be a part of those conversations? What can the community do? And we've built that through providing families with what they need on a basic level first to show them that we are here to support you. We're not here to call Child Protective Services on you. We are not here to, you know, we're not trying to get information so we can call the police to come take your kids away from you. Because what shifted in getting kids to report things that are unsafe that they see and not seeing the police as bad, police officers as bad people, as, you know, only here for negative, is by also shifting that view within our families and doing that through all of these partnerships that we've created. And so just kind of walking through how we did that and how it has completely changed the environment in our community. Our school is housed, we're a very tight little area, and our school is like smack dab in the middle of the area. So you cannot have the, something happen in the community that does not impact the school. And so we had to address that. And it has been really amazing watching how that has shifted the whole perception that our parents have.
Yeah. And I'm so excited to hear these classes. So y'all are pretty much our topics for day one of we're so excited to have y'all there. Just to give everybody just a blurb about the Safety Summit. You know, if you haven't registered, we're 7 weeks away. Like, it's sneaking up on us. Safety Summit is December 9th through 11th in Orange Beach. You know, we're going to be having this amazing event where everybody's coming together to talk about school safety and latest strategies and technologies. And, you know, we've got great speakers like Heather and John, but we'll also be having breakout sessions on behavioral threat assessment, planning large-scale situation drills, how to actively involve all of your staff, including facilities, in your school safety, and so much more. We're also offering semi credits and PLU credits and APLDS credits. So you're attending, getting valuable information, and you're also earning credits towards professional development for it. So if anyone still hasn't registered for Safety Summit, go to our website, inside.io, get in there, get registered. This is something you're not going to want to miss this year. So Grace Ann, do you have anything else? Do we have any kind of questions from anybody that's watching? You know, Heather and John, full of information, like two great safety professionals right here. So if anyone has anything, feel free to sound off and we'll get it over to them.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been watching the Q&A box. We don't have anything rolling in currently, but I do just want to thank John and Heather for joining us today. You know, I am definitely looking forward to every presentation that you guys are going to do at the Safety Summit. I know I really enjoyed John's presentation last year. So Heather, I'm so excited to bring you into the mix and just hear what you guys have. Hold on. Okay. Yeah. So we did have somebody ask, will the agenda for the Safety Summit be available earlier? Is it available now? So we do have that agenda fully available now on our website at inside.io. Like I mentioned, I will be sending out a follow-up email tomorrow for everyone in attendance with all sorts of resources for you guys. And I will make sure to include that. But I just want to say thank you guys for the conversation today. I thought it was very helpful. I learned a lot, you know, especially, for example, I didn't know Kansas got earthquakes. So I appreciate a little tidbit as well. So, but no, seriously, just thank you guys so much for your time and your expertise and for sharing it with us and for all the amazing work and advocacy that you guys are doing within the school safety field. I really, really appreciate it. So, and we've got people flooding in the comment box saying thank you as well. So your presence was very much appreciated. And thank you for sharing your knowledge with us. And we look forward to seeing you guys at Safety Summit.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Look forward to seeing you in December.
Thank you, guys. And thank you so much to everybody that attended today. We will be announcing our next webinar soon, so stay tuned for that. But until then, we will see you guys later.